Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony, fresh from Fan Expo 2016, which was held at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, and we had a blast. It was a great time. I was able to attend some fantastic panels, meet some awesome writers and artists, different creators, and go to certain panels that I didn't plan on going on that ended up being fantastic. I'll share more with you on that later. But for this episode, I was so happy that I was able to attend a panel on Saturday afternoon that I know some other attendees weren't able to get to, because the Fan Expo this year was so packed with good content and so many good celebrities were there, comic book creators were there. You didn't know what you wanted to go to, so you had to miss out on some of the good stuff in order to get to the things that you really wanted to see. But this one, I am so happy that I went to. It was probably my favorite panel of the weekend because the person who it was spotlighted on was Greg Capullo. Now, for those of you who don't know Greg Capullo, I'll put it this way. He is one of the nicest comic book artists that you will ever get an opportunity to meet. And why this is so significant is that this guy should, by rights, have an ego as big as the state of Texas, because he has been 5 years on the critically acclaimed, the high-selling main title Batman series with Scott Snyder. So if you haven't read that, I'm sure in some way or another, if you're a Batman fan, you've heard of The Court of Owls, which is a relatively new concept to the Batman universe. And if you've seen any of the DC animated movies, or if you're watching Gotham, The Court of Owls are already going to be introduced into the Batman mythology through these different mediums. But their run on Batman has been fantastic, to say the least. The art has been consistently great. The storytelling has been fantastic. And to go 5 years straight, the same artist and writer collaborating on something and to give you knocking out good product every month, it's unparalleled. And it's safe to say that their run on the book, on the Batman title, will probably go down in history as the definitive Batman run. I know that sounds like hyperbole, but trust me, it's not. It was that good. So now to meet this artist, Greg Capullo, who's been in the business for a long time, and there's a lot of people who came to this Fan Expo just to meet him because they love Batman. This guy was so generous with his time, he was so friendly, and he looks like the most intimidating dude in the world, but he's not. And to meet a guy who could easily have an ego and not be that way, to be the complete opposite and just have so much gratitude for the response that he's gotten from the fans, it's so refreshing. Even in his panel, the highlight of the panel, which I'm going to share with you because you can't see it, is that he took the microphone off of the stand when the audience had questions and brought the mic to everybody. And if he couldn't bring the mic to them, he told them to come on up so that they can ask his question and shake their hand. And then after the panel, he stayed behind 10-15 minutes longer and took pictures with everybody and answered even more questions. So it was a real treat to be able to be there live in the flesh with Greg Capullo. It was moderated by John Kirk, who is a comic book reviewer for PopMythology.com, who did a really good job moderating it. And when Greg started to just answer questions and bring the mic to people, he allowed it to flow nice and smooth. So we all had a great time. So thank you to John Kirk for his moderation. And now we're going to get into the episode right after Greg Capullo is introduced to the audience. So thank you, everybody, for tuning into the Cave of Solitude. I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, everybody. This is going to be a lot of fun. My name is John Kirk. I'm a comic reviewer with PopMythology.com. I also write for Geekfeed and TrekCore.com. And I have the distinct honor and pleasure of being your moderator for this evening for Greg Capullo. So could you please join me in welcoming him?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. I was going to say, Toronto has been overwhelming me with the outpouring of love from all you guys. I mean, I've just been running nonstop. I mean, you guys don't relent. I mean, just nonstop. I love you, Greg. And it's like, not a tough life. Thank you.
Well, we're just happy to have you. So I think we need to talk a little bit about you, get some questions going, and then eventually...
You want me to leave? I'm not behind my back.
I promise. I'll say nice things. If not, then I'm no good at this. Greg is an illustrator and current artist, obviously, of the best-selling and highly acclaimed Batman series for DC. Prior to that, he was best known for his 80-issue run on Image Comics Spawn, created by Todd McFarlane. And other popular comics include the Marvel Comics X-Force, Quasar. He is the creator of Creech, sci-fi horror comic published by Image. Greg has provided art for Blizzard Entertainment's World of Warcraft, contributing lead character designs for the award-winning HBO animated Spawn series. And wow, there's just so many things you could say about him, but
let's not forget heavy metal album covers.
And let's not forget that.
Maybe it's a five-finger death punch.
And there's all the toy designs and everything you've done. You've had an incredible career, and you're self-taught.
Yeah, that's true. And I just want to point out, it's a damn good thing I can draw kids, because I got in trouble for this stuff, because I just wasn't a very good student in school, and but it all worked out. I started wanting to draw comics when I was 8 years old, right? And so I knew this is what I wanted to do, and because I always had the spark to be able to draw better than the other kids my age around me or whatever like that. So I always wanted to do it. And then once I went to parochial school. I started out in parochial school. The nuns were tough and they kept you in line. And then all of a sudden, I got switched into public schools and nobody was making me do stuff. And so I started getting lazy. And by the time I got into junior high school, when I was a guitar player and I was into girls, and forget about it. You couldn't get me through my school. It's like I skipped school all the time, And even in art class, I failed art class through incompletes because I was skipping so much. I would never complete projects, And eventually, right, I was such a mess up. And they had threatened so many times to kick me out of high school if I didn't start, attending better. And so I would always blow them off. And at one time, they gave me the speech, and I go, I think they mean it. I think they're really going to do it this time. So I tried to shape up, but my mother sabotaged me. She turned off my alarm clock, and I was late, and they kicked me out. And so you go, man, all the chips, I stacked them against my own favor. And in algebra class in high school, I didn't pay attention. I got straight up, so I draw Captain America on the back or whatever, But it all worked out, and that same school that booted me out ended up having me back years later and paying me to go and talk to their students, but leaving all this stuff out, But I got in trouble even after that, After I got out and I was in the workforce, I was a bellhop at a hotel. We had a little nice bell. Stand for ourselves like you see in all the hotels. I couldn't stop drawing. So they would tell me to stop drawing and I just couldn't stop drawing. So they took the stand away. And so that I had no place to, I had to be out there by the door, hi. And so all the other bellmen wanted it. They hated my guts. You had our stand taken away because I couldn't stop drawing. So no matter what, I was always being in trouble because I just couldn't stop drawing, But it all worked out fine. I never used algebra, I'm no longer a bellhop, and don't run into all those other bellhops who hated me. So it's all good now.
So where did the talent come from?
My mother could draw a little bit, and her sister could draw a little bit. I have a very distinct memory of my aunt sitting at the kitchen table, and she had a nap, but she was a beautician. And in that era, they had these big books that had all these little elegant drawings of, mostly female faces in profile with like hairstyle, whatever. And my aunt just whipped this beautiful woman's profile out in just a few lines. And I was just mesmerized by that. To this day, I still try and do what I saw her do in the kitchen when I was a little boy. And I still can't pull it off as well as she did it, So, it was something that's in the family. I think, most things like that, You got a gene pool, and that's one of the things that was in mine. Luckily, otherwise, I don't know what I'd be doing, kids. I don't know what I'd be doing.
Were there any comic influences?
Oh yeah, growing up, I used to look at Mad Magazine and superhero comics, and even these magazines, the cartooning magazine. One was called Cartoons. It was Hot Rods, but cartooning, and Rat Fink and all that stuff like that, and of course, cartoons, And so, like in Mad Magazine, they had Mort Drucker, he did all the movie satires back then, and this guy was just a beast. It was like caricature work, so it looked realistic, but it wasn't. It was caricature work, but it was phenomenal. And so that guy was one of the guys who really turned me on. And then in the superhero stuff, there was many guys, but John Buscema was the guy for me who made me really want to draw comic books. He was my favorite comic book artist. I had a bunch of guys, but that was the guy for me. And then with the cartoons, you had Chuck Jones, you know what I mean? Some of the Bugs Bunnies and Grinch Stole Christmas. That guy's a complete master, you know, of body language and emotion, expression, and all that, you know what I mean? It's just master. So I think it was mainly those three. That was my Holy Trinity right there that just turned me on and made me want to do that stuff, you know? And but the list is long of the guys who I admired and thought were great. I never followed writers, I followed artists. You know what I mean? It's just like I went to the store and that's who I wanted, my favorite artist. That was it.
Was there a Batman, specific Batman creator that you enjoyed?
Back then, I mean, the first guy, you know, was Father Neil Adams, you know, and, you know, Neil's just a beast, you know what I mean? And me and my other friends who could draw, I mean, we were all just blown away by Neil Adams because, you know, he's just like, he could draw so realistically yet not realistic. And just his chops were just so phenomenal. It just, he's mind-blowing, right? So he was definitely one of the guys, too. Again, he wasn't the guy who made me want to do it, but he was my first Batman guy, along with, I guess, maybe back then would be Aparo or something like that. But, yeah, Father Neil was the one that just made my eyes bug out, man. He's just great.
You've had some awesome story arcs. You've had Court of Owls. You've had Death of Family, Super Heavy. You've had so many memorable ones, but which one really stands out in your mind?
You know, it's tough to say that stuff because I'll tell you what, you guys who don't work in comics, it's an assembly line, it's a sweatshop, and you really can't keep track of what you're doing because it's really literally just going like this. You draw your page and it's on and it's on and it's on and on, and you don't really even have time to reflect on anything that you've done, and that's how the years roll for you. And I mean, obviously, I've heard about how successful our run has been. Thank you. Thanks to all of you guys. But I haven't had an opportunity to sit back and really reflect and you know, consider any of that stuff. I know for drawing-wise, one of the ones that was fun for me was Death of the Family. You guys read that one?
Yeah. I think that's a yes.
Yeah, that would be a yes. Death of the Family, I'll tell you a little funny behind-the-scenes story for that one. Now, some of you guys know that I drew Spawn for a long time, which is one of those dark, scary kind of, you know. Yeah, exactly, right? And so Scott Snyder's writing the Death of the Family story, and every once in a while he call me up, like, apologizing. Greg, I'm really sorry. That's my Scott. I don't know. I didn't mean Scotty. I love you, Scotty. And yeah, I love you too. Gotta put my eyebrow up there. I'm sorry for what I'm putting you through. You know, I know this story is just so dark and depressing, and it puts me in such a dark place. I'm sorry to lead you into this dark place. I know how hard this is, and I'm going, this is great. I go, you kidding me? This is like comfortable slippers that are well worn, man. I'm loving every second of this. This isn't dark. I'm dancing. So for him as a writer, you know, it's getting him into this dark place, going into the Joker's psyche. I'm like, fish hooks attaching his skin. Hey, the flesh is rotting. Let's put some flies around that. You know what I mean? So, no, I was having a great time. Poor Scott, man. He's on the slicks couch, you know. But, yeah, that's... so that was a lot of fun, you know. But to be honest with you, like I was saying, you know, about the assembly line like that, it's really true. Like, I just started, like, fishing through some of the old artwork, and I was looking at Court of Owls, which was the first arc. And it's like, it's so much distance between then and now that I look back at it and it's almost like somebody else drew it, you know what I mean? And it's like, so now I could look at part and go, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, it's like looking at it with brand new eyes, you know? So that's what it's like. So I haven't considered anything really deep about it. Wow.
So your collaboration with Scott Snyder, have you considered the scope of the effect of your work? Because it has reinvigorated a lot of readers into Batman, including me. It brought me back into Batman. Talk about that type of collaboration that you've had with him.
It's just crazy, you know. It's just overwhelming, and it's crazy. I mean, it's nothing you can plan for. You know, it's not like putting a boy band together. Hey, I can sing too, and I can dance too. I've got a cute butt. So it doesn't work like that, you know what I mean? So, you know, we were put together. I guess Bob Harris, who was my editor on X-Force back in the day, he's editor-in-chief at DC at the time, right now, and he's the one who kind of like said, hey, I think these two guys would be great together, and I guess it turned out he was right, even though we were ready to kill each other in the beginning. We're good friends now, but you can't like set out and go, I'm going to write this story because I know people are going to eat it up, or I'm going to draw this particular way because people are going to really love this way, I'm going to draw this thing. it's an intangible thing, and it's just, we're fortunate that, you know, lightning struck for us. You know what I mean? It's nothing you could fabricate. So, you know, we're just both, you know, insanely grateful. And, you know, I pinch myself, like, all the time, you know. I was just out to bar with Greg Land, and I was going, you know, I was a little kid, I wanted to draw comic books. I never thought someday somebody would want me to sign my name on a book or take a picture of me or be in a panel and listen to me talk. You know, want to listen to me talk. Most people were always telling me, shut up, you know. Shut up, sit down, you know. So, it's nothing you could plan for. I'm just grateful. It's overwhelming. When people say it's an historic run, I go, well, I guess I wait and see, you know. It sounds amazing what you're telling me we did here. You know, I guess when I'm an old man, well, you know, I'll look back and see if you guys are right. It was a really historic run. Did we really do something special? But, yeah, I'm just doing my job, you know.
So where, in terms of your new directions with DC, after Scott Snyder, now you're working on Detective, like where do you see yourself going after this?
Well, I'm definitely going back to DC, you know, after I'm done working with Mark Millar, what I'm doing, and I'll always say Millar, you can correct me to Miller all the time, I don't care, I think it's cool, and I'll always say Millar, sounds annoying to say Miller when it's spelled A-R at the end, but anyway. I'll be going back to DC. Scott's working on something right now for us that is really, really cool. I think he got jealous of the stuff I'm working on with Mark, because I was sending him pages and he's going, oh my God, this is too good. And it's like he sees how I'm getting off on this subject matter, which is kind of like Lord of the Rings, Road Warrior kind of crazy stuff. And he said, oh yeah, I can write stuff like that too. and so he's got some pretty wild stuff cooking. I can't say a lot about it. I said a little too much on one panel and I got the hook. So we don't want to get the hook again. So, but it's really exciting stuff, and I know probably every person in the room here is wondering, will it be back on Batman? Is it Batman again? And Batman is going to be involved. And now the speculation will be, is it Justice League? He said Batman's involved. Is it Justice League? I can't tell you what it's going to be, but the Caped Crusader will be in our story.
Woo! Well, I think this is a perfect time at this point to turn it over to the audience and let's see if there's any questions. I see there's one right back there.
Hi
there.
Me?
Yep, okay. That's you, yeah.
I have two questions. You work on Spawn for like maybe 7 years.
This is my travel, because
yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I'll go down there with him. Because I don't think anybody's going to hear him. Because he's not allowed Italian like me. Can they move? We'll see how far it goes, and you come up there.
That's great.
We'll meet each other halfway. There we go. Look at this. See?
I'm the brains of that. Thank you. I have two questions. First question is, you work on Spawn for like 7 or 8 years. What was the reason why you hang around for so long?
Yeah.
And the second question is, what is it like working with Todd McFarlane?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, the reason I hung around, obviously, listen, I must have been happy if I hung around that long, right? I will say to this day, and probably to the day I jump off out of this business, you know, because I'm too old to do it or whatever, nobody cares about me anymore, is the most fun I had was working with Todd McFarlane. That's just facts. And I'll tell you why. Todd gave me all kinds of freedom. It was the closest working relationship since, like, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. You know, those guys were very loose about how they did it. You know, a lot happened over a conversation or Stan jumping up on the table. Some in the office are going, you know, something like this. You know, and so Todd would call me up and tell me, you know, I need like 3 pages of Sam and Twitch, and they'll be talking about this. Give me a little room on the 3rd page because I got a lot to say. It was a lot of times that loose, you know what I mean? So I had all this freedom, and it was always scripted after I provided the visuals. So that made for very creative visual storytelling. You're more confined when you're given a full script, which is less fun, obviously, for an artist, especially one who was trained in the Marvel way, as I was. So working with Todd was great, and one of the amazing things was, you know, I trained myself to be, you know, a sound dresser, and closer to the stuff that you see me doing in Batman. But once I was with Todd, and Todd draws some whacked out stuff, I could experiment, you know, and he never ever put a leash on me. I look back at some of the issues that I did, and it's so whacked out, maybe in like the 30s range or something like that, and it was so distorted, and I go, wow, I did that, you know, and because I was just free to experiment. He never ever told me one way or another, and so that led to a great deal of fun, you know, working
you know, on Spawn, and that's why I stayed long. It was fun and it was cool, and how is Todd to work with? I guess it's going to be dependent on who you ask, you know, because Todd can be a wonderful sweetheart and a wonderful guy, or he could be the devil that looks you in the eye and, you know, your blood boils away, you know what I mean? But the Todd that I know was always great. That's another reason why I stayed with him, you know what I mean? But it's like, you know, he gives to you as you give to him, you know what I mean? I was always, you know, workhorse, you know, as I am to this day, you know, just giving you quality work on a timely basis, and, you know, and I don't cause problems, you know? So I'm like the perfect guy you want to work with, because there you have it. Quality work, timely fashion, doesn't cause problems. Very much opposite when I was in school. You know? So anyway, so that's the answer to your questions. Anybody else? Yeah, go ahead. Right.
Hi. First, I just want to say I'm a huge fan of all your work. And my question is, what was like a comic book character that you kind of looked forward to being able to draw and then got the opportunity to? Or what is like a comic book character that you would like to draw? Or what's been one that you were excited to add your own personal touch to, kind of thing? Because everybody's artwork's different, and so it's like, you know, there's going to be a different style when every comic book changes artists. So what was one of yours to take a take on?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, well, I guess the first thing I always say when people say, you know, what character did you want to work on or anything like that, when you wanted to do something since you were 8 years old, you're just grateful that, you know, you're actually able to do it now. You know what I mean? So I can't say I had a bad time on anything that I've done, you know. But, you know, and it might sound like I'm playing a card here when I say Batman, because I just came out Batman and whatever, but it really, I would say Batman, and I'll tell you why, is my mother found a drawing I did when I was 4 years old, and it was a Batman Robin, and it was from the opening animated sequence of a 66 TV show, with the cape flapping up in the wind, you know, and at 4 years old, I had all the stitches on Robin, I had the R on the chest, it was backwards, but it was there, and so when I look at that, and now I'm a professional, and I'm drawing Batman, and I made this big of a mark on the character, I mean, that's the mind-blowing point right there, you know, for me, so that I touched such an iconic character as Batman, and that and it went well, you know what I mean? Because, you know, it could go the other way, too. You mess up Batman, the crowd will kill you, you know what I mean? They're merciless. You got, well, you know, you guys know you're merciless, right? You messed up Batman, you're dead, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I would say Batman was definitely it, but I love so many comic characters, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's particular to draw the Joker and all that, and the Rogues Gallery in particular, it's just, there's pretty much the highest point. Let me just put it to context, how much of a big deal it was for me. Okay, I grew up a Marvel guy. Sorry, DC, they know it, it's a fact. I never thought I'd work for DC ever. And so, when I decided to go mainstream again, and I approached Marvel, and I hooked up with DC, and I says, you know, I'm gonna come back to mainstream, what do you got? You know, one of the offers at Marvel was first Wolverine, then it changed to Avengers versus X-Men, which they didn't tell me was gonna be a whole cluster of people working on it. It made it sound like it was gonna be mine, you know? So being I was a Marvel guy, you know, now I had this struggle, but they offered me Batman. And so Batman sort of trumps everything, right? And so my wife will tell you, you know, for 2 months I struggled with this, because my roots was at Marvel, but Batman. You know what I mean? And that's how it went every night. Yeah, yeah. And so the little kid in me just was, you know, like a baby kicking, I suppose, you know, and just says, you got to go do Batman. And it turned out to be the best decision, because I'm glad I wasn't involved with the Avengers vs. X-Men. I'm very, 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 very happy that I was. And I'm very happy that I've been involved with this Batman guy. So, yeah, that's how that all goes.
Yeah, sure, come on. Yeah,
I'm curious
what
your thoughts are.
All right, I'm curious to know your thought process when you were working on the Joker for the first time.
Well, I mean, that's just good fun. I modeled him after my mother, actually. He was totally crazy. That's not even really a joke. No, the Joker was great because, I mean, obviously, just to begin with, he's the Joker, but I get to get this new cool tape with him because he had his face cut off. I'm sorry, I'm boring, you know, I see you yawning over there. I'll try to be more entertaining. I got a dance act later, you can catch it. But anyway, so, yeah, to have his
face reattached, rotten, and all that stuff like that. So I got to do Joker on steroids, Joker, you know what I mean? Over the top crazy. So, you know, that was nothing but a sheer party. Like I said, not so much for Scott, but for me, sheer party. That was a blast. Yeah.
How did you come up with the really menacing design for the talent in the Court of Owls?
You know, well, I mean, Scott sent me, a picture of a particular owl. That was one of the first things he did. And he was telling me kind of what he had in mind for, like, the treatment of the eyes. And from there, you know, how I work, when I have to design a character, I try and go, all right, what's the essence of that character, right? And so we're going through the owl and I create my first talon. You know, the line work that you see, the seams on the uniform and all this kind of stuff, it's basically how I felt about, like, feathers or whatever. Now, there's obviously no feathers, but the certain way that I use the lines, I tried to bring that out, you know what I mean? And so that's, you just try and take those elements, like Spider-Man has webs. You know what I mean? So the talent, you just try and go, what does that mean? You know, how do you bring that out visually? So, and then when I had to, you know, create a multitude of talents from all different time periods, Google is your friend these days, man. I had been in a library, which was, again, against my nature from school. But I got to Google all these images of dress, and I looked at different soldiers and stuff like this. And the further you go back, the more you go, how do I make that look tough and cool? Because guys were like, skirts and stuff and stockings, you know, and so but that became the challenge. And so I would try and take elements and borrow from that and put my little spin on it to build all these talons. So it's just, you know, so part of it's using logic and part of it's inspiration and part of it's doing a little bit of homework, and it all comes together. Yeah.
Thank you. Sure.
Can you speak a little bit more about Reborn and how the switch was going from working with Scott to now Milan?
Sure. Martin Miller, Millar, has been after me for a while, and so it just became a matter of timing. You know, my contract was coming to a close at DC, and so I go, here's my chance to cheat on Scott Snyder, who's cheated on me multiple times during our marriage together. So, with many different people, he doesn't care, men, women, Becky Cloon, it doesn't matter, male, female, he swings both ways. So, I said, here's my chance to have a little... Sorry, sometimes I can't believe it comes out of my mouth even from my I just can't stop myself. It's just part of the disease. And so when the opportunity came, I said, yeah, that sounds cool. And Mark says, I got like the perfect platform for you. And it really is because of the kind of stuff I used to like to draw, you know, back when I was a kid, because I was a big Frazetta fan. So get to all that fantasies of barbarians and dragons and demons and warriors and all that kind of stuff. And that's all the subject matter that's in Reborn. And so that was like a no-brainer. And so how does it differ working from Scott? I tease Scott all the time, you know, because Scott can be a little wordy, just a little wordy. A lot of words that I have to always get the crowbar and go, how do I fit this into this page? You know, whereas Mark Millar, he's a lot laid back with the wording. So now I don't have to force fit my art. And so I have all this room to draw. So as an artist, this is a blast. And also, Mark paces in a very unusual way, and doesn't necessarily appeal to me. He likes to pretty much have four beats on a page, which I find a little strange. I'm sure he's got his reasons, and I'm not trying to modify it. I'm just going to do it this way. But the advantage is big, splashy panels with a lot of detail drawn in. And so the biggest, best part of it is more people will see my artwork this time. So, and I tell Scott, and he's going, well, I'm going to use less words next time you come back. I promise. So that's the biggest difference, man. And plus, you know, you get to design it all from the floor up, you know, which is a treat right there, right? Because when you're a kid drawing, you're on your floor, your underwear, just coming up with whatever in your imagination, you know, and that's close to this now, you know. Please don't visualize me now with my underwear on the floor. But, you know, it's that same joy that you have as a child, you know, of just freedom. Now, there's nobody can tell you that it's wrong because you're inventing it. So now it's not wrong. This is what I say it is. So that's a blast. Yeah.
Where do you do most of your work? Like, do you have an office or do you work at home mostly for your art?
Yeah, my office is in my home. Yeah, so which is great because I've never seen my wife because I work so many hours a day. And plus, you know, I got two kids at home too. One's going to be gone soon. He's a man, thank goodness. And but I got a 14-year-old home.
And so they would never see me, you know, and I can't live without my wife. She comes to every show with me because I just need her, and because she's that special. And she is, she's awesome. And so, yeah, thanks. That's true. She's really mad. I'm not just saying it because she's here to listen, because she knows I'm mad about her. I tell how great she is to everybody who give me an ear. But so I'm lucky that I work at home, because anytime I want to just leave the table, go give my wife a kiss, she's right there, you know what I mean? DC has treated me well enough to where I can retire my wife. She doesn't have to go to work anymore, so she's there, so I can kiss her anytime I need. So, yeah, I work at home. So.
You talk about you get to make your own designs and stuff. Have you ever designed a costume or a thing that where you're like, oh my God, now I have to draw this all the time?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. You know, when I created the Creech, when I was publishing on their Image Comics, you know, you drew him the first time, going, that looks badass, that is tough, I like that. Then I started drawing, because for those who don't know, Ultimate, he's very muscular, and so he had every ripple and muscle, but then his suit had all these striations of the material pulling from every direction, like webbing. And once you start drawing that, along with those tentacles, I was like, man, oh man. It was like Tom McFarlane, when he invented that spaghetti webbing, man, he said, what did I do to myself? It's you painted yourself in the corner and you can't paint yourself out now. And so he cursed himself all the time for creating that webbing that we all know now. So yeah, I would say the Creech probably. Anybody else back here?
Fellow artist myself, I get stuck on creating some handles and stuff like that. How do you find to work about that and fitting all that is being described to you into that actual page?
Well, see, a writer has to have some flexibility, because a writer doesn't know the mechanics of what has to go on a physical page, whereas an artist does. Okay, so that's step one, is talk your writer into being a little more flexible and go, you know what, I can't do this all on one page. You know, it would be better to pace this out over two pages, you know what I mean? Like that. But an experiment that deals with panels, I'll give you, it's a great little exercise. Is there any other people who want to be artists, comic book artists and stuff like that in the audience? Yeah, a few. All right, well, here's a great little exercise. What you want to do is you want to take a panel and shape the panel without having any idea what you're going to put in that panel first. And then fill that with the composition using the elements that you choose. And then draw a panel going in a different shape. And boom, try and make a composition using those elements in that panel. That will elevate your creativity of storytelling exponentially, right? Because a lot of people, they stick to this thing, or they'll even draw it. I've even seen people draw something and then frame it afterwards. No. You frame the page first, right? And try and get behind the psychology of what frame shapes can do to accentuate your storytelling. Simple, rudimentary example would be a person falling from a very high building. Well, then why not a tall, skinny, vertical panel? So that's how you can express your creativity and come up with new ideas of how to tell a story. But if you're finding yourself cramped, it's a good idea to either, if you can't combine action, you know what I'm saying? Combine the action to go, okay, they've got all this action, I'll combine this in these panels. If you can't do that, you gotta get the writer and go, hey, what do you want me to do? It's not Adventures in Tiny Town. You know what I mean? Right? And, you know, Todd used to tell me when he worked with Peter David on Hulk years ago that, you know, he's another one of these writers that know how to shut his mouth. Right? And so he says, here we've got this big character, the Hulk, and I got to draw a 9-panel grid on every page. How the hell are you going to draw the Hulk? Hulk's big, and you got me putting him in little panels like this, you know? Adventures in Tiny Town. So, you know, sometimes writers they don't understand, and you've got to explain it to them, you know what I mean? Sure thing. All right. Yeah, okay. Anything to keep you awake.
Sorry. In the 90s, we saw the formation of Image. If you were to build like an all-star team that you would leave and start a new company with throughout the time, who would you pick?
You know what? I can't really answer that, because, you know, I don't know what everybody's work ethic is. I know a lot of guys and gals who I think are talented and produce beautiful work, but I don't know what their work ethic is. You could give me the most beautiful work on the planet, but if I got to be on the phone with you going, where are your pages? You're useless to me. So I first have to examine everybody as an individual and go, you know, who can really sit down there and get the job done? Because it's not all about pretty pictures. Image was all about pretty pictures, and look at how timely their books were. Right? Everything was late. So, no, I don't care how beautiful you draw. If you aren't sitting down at your drafting table pumping out that work, to me, you're useless, I don't want you. I'd rather a person who had less drawing power, because that'll build over time. I'd rather have the guy or the girl who's got the guts to stay in the chair, the determination, willing to sacrifice. So I don't know what who my all-star team would be. I'd have to interview everybody first, you know what I mean?
Hi, I was just wondering if you could pick like any hero, any villain to write like and take your own image on, who would it be? And same, who would you kill? Like any hero or villain?
Well, I've never given any thought on who to kill, but I've always liked big characters, you know. So a character like the Hulk would be awesome. I love when Scott gives me even a panel to draw Killer Croc, you know. I'd like to do a Bane story, you know. If I did Fantastic Four, I would totally get off on drawing Ben Grimm, even a Ben Grimm solo. I mean, I love big characters, you know what I mean? And so it'd be one of those kind of guys, you know, and a little less big, but still would be awesome, be like Lobo, like Simon Bisley kind of era logo. Oh God, I would love to kill on that, you know. So yeah.
Your original Batman artwork is fairly difficult to acquire in terms of what's readily available. I'm curious what your thinking is behind which select pages you decide to release, as well as what prices on that.
Yeah, sure. You know, well, kind of me and the rest of the guys who created the stuff, we just go. You don't want to sell the pages that are worthless, you know what I mean? Not worthless, but you know what I mean? Like the Talking Heads pages that, you know, maybe don't even have Batman on it, because we just feel that just dilutes the market. So maybe you put a page out for, you know, $50, $100, but it's really a worthless page, you know, in all intents and purposes, because it doesn't have the main character on it. And then, you know, the other way you establish it, obviously you have your personal feelings about how many hours you put into it, what it took to get that page done, what you feel the quality of the output was. And then you have the other factors too, like certainly, you know, Court of Owls, the stature that, you know, the acclaim that it got, that's going to demand a higher, you know, price tag than maybe something that, you know, let's say, you know, whatever else. Maybe my first title, Quasar, you know, you get nothing for that. Who care about that? You don't have many people. You have a few people, but you're not going to get very much money for that. So, I mean, that's also part of it. I'm, you know, people yell at me, because I've got some high price tags on my artwork and stuff, and I guess that really means I don't want to sell it, you know what I mean? Because it is hard selling it, like, and it makes me want to put ridiculous prices, because, like, especially when I did stuff with Todd, you know, I mean, if you see some of this stuff in person, holy good God, the amount of detail and work that's involved in it, you know what I mean? You just can't sell it at really at a very affordable price to the average person who wants to buy it. Because it's just, you know, you can't. I'd rather have this, you know, because it's just, you go, wow. And so pricing is one of the most difficult things that there is to do. And we talk among ourselves because it's agonizing, you know. And you don't want to, you know, undercut it to the point where a guy just wants to flip it. That's the worst feeling, man. When you've taken this part of you and you give it to somebody and they go, here it is on eBay, or they sell it, they only want to profit off it. That is one of the most painful things that we as artists witness. So it's a tough thing, and we're still in the process of figuring out. It's the hardest thing to do is price your own artwork. It's just a nightmare. I hate it. So let me try to get somebody further back.
What's your favorite part about your career, and what do you think your best art is?
All right. Before you answer that question, I just want to say that that's my kid. So I'm pretty proud right now.
Oh, that's nice. All right. Nice to see you. The best part of my career is that I have one. Okay, that's number one. That's the best part of my career. And what is my best work? I would like to say that the work I'm about to do, because you know, that's how everything you do in life should be. You know, you should always be going up the ladder, and never down the ladder. And standing still, that's no good either. You know what I mean? I don't want to lock in. I hope that I'm always gonna, you know, get better and improve. Even if it's a little bit, even if it's barely noticeable to the people who are going to look at the book. If I know it's an improvement, I drew that hand better than I was able to do it last time, or whatever it be, or I thought of a new way of storytelling that's improved. You know, life is about growth and moving forward, and anytime you stand still, you're stagnant, and stagnant is death, right? And we're all going to get to that point at some point. You know, we're all going to die and not be able to do anything. I'm definitely not a Bible guy, but it does have a verse in there that I heard, and it stuck with me, and it's how I live my life. And that's, whatever your hand findeth to do, do it with all your might. It goes on to say, basically, that eventually you're going to be old and you're not going to do anything. You're going to be worthless. So I definitely live my life that way. Whatever I undertake, man, I am all in 100%. Much to the point where it probably drives my family nuts, you know what I mean? Because I'm very, very freaking gung-ho and intense about everything. But that's my personality, you know what I mean? And so I believe that I'm always going to do better work as the years grow on. I think the work I'm doing right now on Reborn with Mark Millar is the best work I've done, you know, and I hope that it continues to be so, you know? So that's how that goes. Yeah. Thanks. Guy in the blue shirt, yeah.
My question is, I'm a big heavy metal fan, of course you are. I just want to know, of course, with Black Label, I've seen a little bit of you and back and forth with Zach Well on Twitter. Have you ever, like, got a chance to sit down and talk about even doing some art direction for a Black Label record?
I've never talked about doing it. Certainly, you know, I wouldn't mind. I mean, when I met him a while back, you know, he took my email and all that stuff, phone number, like, you know, maybe that would be an idea at some point. But, you know, to be honest with you, I love Zach so much. It'd be intimidating because I would want to make it perfect. You know, he's got a very distinctive style that he's been approaching a lot of his, you know, merch with and everything like that. So I know what he'd be kind of looking for. But then I go, well, you already got that locked down, you know, so what do you really need me for, right? So, but I'd be down for it, man. You know, he looks like freaking Thor, sort of, you know what I mean? A big Viking warrior. So, you know, I'd like, if I was going to do any artwork, I'd like to have him incorporated in it, you know what I mean? Like when I did the painted the cover of Disturbed's 10,000 Fists, I didn't model it after him, but it was kind of, there's a character in there that was, you know, inspired by Zach. So you see a big burly Viking looking biker guy with his wristband up in the back, pumping his fist 10,000 fists in the air. So, I'd love to do something with Zach. For his birthday, I drew a little character drawing and tweeted to him, you know what I mean? So I love Father Zach, but there's no talk about any album work yet. Anybody? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, nice to meet you. What would be the, as Ray, you're the first person to see the story and all of us get jazzed and like a twist happens and everything. What's your favorite one to draw as you're reading it? What was your favorite and what would have been the hardest one that you had to do? Something that maybe you didn't want to do put to paper.
Okay, well.
The hardest one, no doubt, was Zero Year. Oh, God, Zero Year. You killed me. Now, you go for Batman because he's got shadows all the time, right? So that makes for easier drawing because you hide stuff in some shadows. But Zero Year's all out in the daylight. And we're going to make Gotham completely overgrown. So, man, everything I got to draw, I can't hide anything. Everything was laborious, man. I had to draw so much for that damn thing. And Scott had no concept. He's the sweetest man. Scott, you're so cute. I love you, Scott. He has no concept of what's difficult or easy. I actually used to have to draw emails from him and go, this is why this panel took 3 days. And this is why this one only took 2 hours. This is why you can't keep writing panels that take me 3 days, right? Because I have a deadline. You're making me work 16 hours a day. And so Zero Year was definitely the toughest gig that I did with Scott. And probably the toughest gig I've ever done was the Zero Year. Anyways, the toughest use, Jesus. But then Court of Owls, I'm really proud of that, you know, when I look back, and that had a lot of great stuff in it, and great storytelling, great story, and so I'm really proud. I think that was pretty cool. A little easier, you had marble walls, a little bit of blackness, some water, a little easier to get through, yeah. Yeah, let me try this guy right here. Pass that mic, maybe. Pass that back.
I think that's all we got.
During the Endgame run, we got the chance to see you draw the Justice League. Do you like the opportunity to draw a team book, or do you prefer dealing with characters like Batman or Spawn that are usually in the dark or in shadows?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm going to tell you the reality about that team book business, because I did one of those way back in the day called X-Force. And Todd and I have had the conversation plenty of times about how much team books suck. And here's why. All right, I gotta dig a ditch, and it's gonna be this deep, and I'm gonna make this much money. Well, when you sign up for a team book, and on diet, you're gonna make the same money, but you're gonna be digging a whole lot more ditches, because you got all those different characters, all those different costumes. Man, oh man, is it harder. If I got the choice between a team book and an individual character, it's individual character every time. Now, is it fun to have all those characters to play off each other? Yeah, sure, it is. And I guess over time, I'm gonna memorize all the costumes, but still, it's so much harder to give every character their unique voice, and what that, I mean their body language and something to do in the panel. Because a lot of these guys, they write in these scenes where, you know, got a team of 6-7 people, and they're standing around. Well, somehow those people gotta look cool. You can't just write every stand like this. So it's a lot more effort and for the same pay. So you go, if I gotta make the same amount of money, well, I only wanna dig the one ditch. I mean, I'm digging the whole line of ditches. So yeah, if I got my choice, man, I'm sticking with the individual characters all the time. You know, maybe Fantastic Four, not so bad. You got four characters, I don't know. You know, but Scott goes, if we ever do Justice League, if we ever do Justice League, love brothers coming. So cute, I love you. He says, no, I'll write it in a way that you're not doing that. You know, I'll focus on just a couple characters at a time. You know, and so you won't be doing that. I promise. And I'll use less words. So maybe.
So you said you started drawing at 4. Was there any particular character that you would dress up as a kid?
All right, jeez, why you do that to me? I used to get a bath towel, wear like a cape, okay? In my mind, I was Batman, okay? And my mother had this thermometer case, and I used to fill it with water, and one end was clear, and I'd pretend I was conducting experiments. Oh, the water turned green. It didn't really turn green, but oh, that means, you know, whatever, you know. And so I guess if you count to a bathtub as a cape, that was the costume, right? And maybe my socks, football socks, pulled up a little high to be boots, you know. But probably her, my mother's gloves. Okay, you happy now? My mother's gloves. Thanks very much for that.
With the New 52, there was an increase in the amount of like crossover stories between lots of different books. Did that ever, and especially with Batman, did that ever kind of affect how you were drawing any of the stories or what characters you created for your stories?
Not on my end. I don't know if it did with Scott, you know, because I'm kind of removed from that. Sometimes the writers get together and they have summits and whatever. But I think being we were the kind of the lead of that, you know, we kind of dictated, you know, the other way, you know. Wasn't like the tail wagging the dog. It was, you know, the dog wagged the tail like it should be. So I think other guys had to more pay attention to, you know, what Scott was doing, you know, on the writing end. So that's how that goes, yeah.
So I know that they're bringing the Court of Owls TV on Gotham. So I was wondering for you, are you super protective of the Court of Owls because you essentially created the only visual for did they come to you asking for advice, and is it kind of frustrating to see it brought to live action so quickly?
All right, well, so first off, it's totally flattering to begin with, right? And when you have been in the business as long as I have, you learn a little thing about letting go of stuff, because stuff will always come along that aggravates you, you know, because you it's personal to you, and you will want to kill somebody or yourself like every other week, you know what I mean? So you have to let go of some stuff. So it's going on the TV show. That's amazing. Yeah, I'm nothing but honored by it. And if they do a great job with it, fantastic. The visual end, you know, it'd be nice if they follow me. I'm sure it would affect Scott more, right? Because Scott invented the mythos. I just provided the visual end of that thing. So I'm sure Scott would probably be, you know, even more so protective of it, or, you know, upset by it if they altered the essence of it in any way. Which, I'm just happy if they pay me money.
I think at this point, this has to be the last question, because okay, we've got to start shutting things down.
Okay, you want me with the tall top hat, if you can.
Can you tell me about your studio?
Talk to me about what?
What do you have in your studio? What inspires you?
Oh, my studio? It's not very glamorous. I'll tell you one of the worst things in my studio. Me and the missus were walking through a mall one time, and these guys were up from Florida selling sugar gliders. You don't know what these little freaking animals are. They're these little pee and pooping machines that are basically like flying squirrels that look like chipmunks. In Australia, that's where they're from, they refer to them as vermin. We have them in our home now. Because they're so adorable when they advertise them for you. Look at him. He hides in my pocket. Look at him. He drinks out of this cap filled with Kool-Aid. And you go, this is awesome. My wife goes, we think we should get him. And then she doesn't spend a minute of time, and they're in my office, and they've destroyed it. Oh, sugar gliders, they don't chew your stuff. They're not rodents, they're marsupials. They have destroyed so many of my hardcover books from DC and whatever. They've chewed up woodwork. So that's the worst thing that's in my office, okay? One of the least benign, the most benign thing that's in my office are my flat file cabinets where I store my artwork. But none of this draws inspiration, but what I do have behind me, just because it's kind of cool, DC was kind enough to make all these toys based on my figures and such. And so I've got some display cases behind my drafting table filled with those. Yeah, they're awesome, right? Yeah. I got to do all the platinum statues and everything. And you know, I got to admit, and my wife was surprised because I'm very non-geek, and I think I fill a notch in her eyes when I start collecting all the die-cast Batmobiles, you know what I mean? So I got all the Batmobiles, you know, the big ones. And so she goes, wow, I didn't think you were like that. But yeah, a little bit I am. So yeah, I don't have anything inspirational. There's nothing on the walls because of the sugar gliders. Because otherwise I've got these great, beautiful framed Frazetta prints that I want to hang up, but they'll destroy them. Because they're marsupials, baloney. So yeah, nothing inspirational because I got the rodents. Got like 5 years left of life in him, I think.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Okay.
That's
it?
So that's great. That's fantastic. Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. That was the spotlight on creator Greg Capullo at this year's 2016 Fan Expo held in Toronto. It was awesome to be in the room with the other fans of Greg's work and to hear him talk a little bit more in depth of his creative process with Scott Snyder. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. So please visit us at cavesolitude.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. It would be great. And stay tuned for more Fan Expo coverage coming up real soon. We will talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.